Hi, welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday, July 15th, 2011. I'm Lisa, and joining me today are Chris, Bob, Steve, Lauren, and we do have our former Disney cast member, Ron, joining us as well. Welcome, everyone.
Hello again.
Hello again.
Hi.
This is part two where we're going to jump into the news. We have a few news stories that we think you'll find interesting, and let's get started with this. Lauren, do you want to start us off tonight?
Yep, I just have a little quick one, actually. This fall, construction is going to begin on Splitsville, a 50,000 square foot upscale entertainment center that's going to combine bowling, billiards, dining, music, and nightlife. This is actually going to be in the downtown Disney area.
Yeah, I think that's going to go in where the old Virgin
Ride Makers, which is currently there, is moving over to the downtown Disney side.
Yeah. They're moving to Marketplace, right?
Yes. Well, yeah, in that section of downtown Disney, yeah, not on the west side.
Sounds kind of cool, though.
Out of the west side.
I don't know that I would go bowling, but it's...
Yeah, I don't know how many people go to Walt Disney World to go bowling, but I guess it's one more thing to do. You know, dining, music, shopping, billiards. I mean, could be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to go to downtown Disney for, you know, the night, do dining, shop a little. It's always kind of interesting down there.
Well, what was interesting about this announcement to me, I mean, it's definitely a different idea. I didn't expect them to announce a bowling alley. But they did admit that, you know, they're kind of stalled in their progress as to the conversion of, you know, Pleasure Island into Hyperion Wharf, which was supposed to open in 2013, and now who knows, because they're saying, you know, they're still examining what to do with the area. So I don't know if they're getting some feedback from guests saying, you know, we don't want more shopping and dining. You know, we want something else down there. I mean, Disney, if you're looking for something to put in there, put back some clubs.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You know,
the Adventurers
least,
Club.
Yeah, bring
yeah,
back
Adventurers
least
Club
the
had
improv,
a huge following.
The, yeah, the Adventurers Club and the Improv Comedy Club. If you don't want the
and A-Trax.
Yeah, well, okay, and maybe yeah, A-Trax. But if you don't want all those musical clubs and whatnot, bring back at least some of them. You know, I mean, I think there's room for all of that down there.
I agree.
You know, and really, I mean, with Splitsville going into the Virgin Megastore space, that's not really Pleasure Island. So it remains to be seen what's going to be, you know, done with that whole space. I mean, because the buildings are still up. I mean, you can walk through Pleasure Island during the day. And, you know, the Adventures Club is still up and the Improv Comedy, you know, warehouse is still there. And
now, I heard they were starting to tear some of those. Oh, they tore down, what was it, where the Beach Club was?
Yeah, but most of that stuff is, you know, the stage is gone and everything, but most of that stuff is still up. I mean,
yeah.
I had heard a while back that the big Pleasure Island sign was coming down, but that's still up.
Yeah, it's amazing. It was a couple, we went like a year after it was closed, and it was still just like it was years ago. They hadn't done a single thing.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what I found more interesting about their announcement today, is like, we're still, yes, it's delayed, yes, we're still trying to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it seems to me like you should decide what you're going to do with it before you shut down the clubs.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first bowling alley thing they've attempted. I think there was supposed to be one at Wild World of Sports a few years ago that when like attendance started, they thought attendance was going to start tanking with the economy, that there was supposed to be a huge bowling complex supposed to going over at Wide World of Sports.
That's right. I do seem to remember something like that. Yeah, and
yeah,
they were
for
host
tournaments
and stuff.
And then,
yeah,
and then they'd bring those people in for the tournaments, and they'd fill up the rooms. And then I think someone went bankrupt when all that was going on, and the whole thing kind of fell through. Yeah, they have. When I was over at Disneyland Paris, they have one of these like huge game room, and I think it was bowling and billiards and all that type places there that's in their Disney Village area, but it's only open certain days. It was closed almost every day that I went by it. So I don't know how popular it is.
I can just imagine how expensive it's going to be too.
I mean,
they charge, you know, what, like $18 to play mini golf. So, you know, I mean, a game of bowling plus the shoe rental and everything. I don't know. I mean, I definitely think it's a neat concept.
Yeah, and that building's been empty except for Ride Makers, which they kind of shoot in there. And it's not. And I was always wondering, what are they going to put in that huge building when Virgin Megastore left?
Right.
So that's kind of a perfect fit, but it's not anything I'd really be interested in unless it's like a rainy day.
Do you think this might be a play to get more locals back to downtown Disney now that the clubs are gone? And like, I know Virgin was a big place people would go if they couldn't find a CD somewhere.
Well, I mean, it wasn't at least unofficially. I know Disney said this wasn't, has never said this is the reason, but weren't locals the reason that the clubs closed in the first place?
That's what I heard.
They couldn't control the element in Orlando that, you know, some parts of Orlando, you know, there are obviously, you know, not so nice people that would come in and cause trouble. I think that's what really happened. And, you know, they just decided, let's shut down the clubs and not deal with all that.
Yeah. Well, it used to be, when I was there on the college program, it was a ticketed admission to get on to Pleasure Island. And it was really nice because they had extra entertainment in the streets, and you could drink in the streets, and you go club to club, and it was one price.
Yeah, I remember it was all controlled. $21 or $22. Yeah.
And I got like an annual pass for some cheap amount. And then they had a cast member night that you could go on certain nights. And so it was a lot of fun. But then after I left, I think they went to where it was all open and you paid by club, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think that was after I left, too.
Yeah. So then you get everybody who just wants to hang out and cause problems in that area because they don't have to pay an admission.
Yeah. And the solution there was go back to being strictly ticketed.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think they were trying to be more like City Walk, because City Walk does that whole, you know, club thing, you know, pay as you go, but different layouts. So I don't know. I just think it's a shame that, you know, it shut down in the first place. It's a shame that they haven't done anything with it up to this point, because it's been years. And now they're saying, yeah, we still don't know what we're going to do with it. But in the meantime, you know, let's go bowling.
It would be nice to see something. And there were rumors that they were going to maybe do another different adult entertainment Pleasure Island type area out by Animal Kingdom, but then I hadn't heard anything about that in a long time either.
Oh, the Night Kingdom thing?
Yeah, there were some rumors going
around.
Oh,
so that people had a place to go after Animal Kingdom?
Well, since Pleasure Island was gone, they were thinking about doing something different.
Yeah, and I had always heard Night Kingdom was more pitched like a private thing, like what is it that SeaWorld has, the special park that SeaWorld has with the
you're talking about like
Discovery
the dolphin
Cove?
Discovery Cove. Yeah, Night Kingdom was supposed to be sort of like that, is what I had heard. You know, private, you know, exclusive, limited number of people, but it was more like a, you know, animal interaction type things. And I don't know. And then people are saying, well, you know, from Night Kingdom, they got that new private tour that you could do at Animal Kingdom, you know, with groups of 12, which is, you know, looks pretty cool. I don't know. I mean, it's just amazing. It's been years and that space is just sitting there. And I can't believe they're just letting all of, you know, those dollars that people are looking to spend at night when they're looking for, you know, dancing, music, you know, drinking, eating, you know, to just basically leave.
Okay, so Steve, what's your news story?
Mine is the controversial refillable drink mugs.
Ooh.
So now a story came out today, and this was on, I think Disboards talked about this during April Fool's, that there was going to be some new drink mug that you could only refill, you know, there was some chip in it or something. So now they've
been out a lot.
Yeah. So now they actually reported that there are actually testing this technology. So evidently it's over at one of the, I believe it's at All Star Sports. So the drink mug has a RFID chip in it. So it'll only work at the station because I guess they were having problems with people bringing back their mugs from years past. So it'll work during your length of stay and allow you to use it at the resort. So they're testing it out there.
And my understanding is you can only refill it every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you don't constantly, so it probably, you can get a drink, go eat, and if you want a refill, go get it.
I kind of like this idea.
I mean, it's going to keep everyone on the up and up, but...
Well, you have to figure...
The lengths people have to go.
Yeah, because you... And I assume at that resort, you know,
and
it's a huge food court.
People will figure out a way around it.
Yeah, they just walk up and they constantly fill their mugs over and over again, or they bring them from the past, so they probably had a problem. So
I think that's probably the bigger issue, don't you?
So, yeah, the issue is that people are bringing mugs from, like, 1984... And, you know, getting refills, which, I'm sorry, that's just sad.
Well, it's sad, but it really doesn't bother
people,
me.
I think people just feel like they just want to get one up on Disney and they feel good about it then or something, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, which is, and I would agree with that too. And yeah, I can't believe they actually have to spend money on the technology to do that now. But this is what happens when people just can't, you know, abide by the rules. And I don't know how to make it more clear to people. The sign says, you know, refills only, you know, at your resort during the length of your stay.
Not only that, but I don't think people realize that by doing that, it winds up upping the prices.
Yeah. Well, it would if the syrup costs them any money, but it doesn't.
Yeah, but there are still costs involved. I mean, you got to figure you have... I mean, you still have, well, the cups may even be free, because I've heard different things. I've heard that Coke, you know, actually pays for them, but let's assume they don't. You've got the cup, you've got the machine, which somebody's got to do maintenance on it. You've got,
yeah, but they'd have, you know, to do maintenance anyway.
You've got employees who have to monitor those machines and presumably, you know, refill them with ice, syrup, whatever. You know, you've got employees to help out and, you know, man the drink stations and things. So there are still costs. I mean, you know, there is no such thing as a free lunch. So, I mean, there's still costs with it. And yeah, I mean, you know, if it wasn't costing them anything, maybe they wouldn't care. But, you know, all of these people who feel like they have to one-up Disney, you know, and I don't know.
I think the fact is Disney costs a certain amount of money. And there are things that you can do legitimately, honestly, to save money. But when you start cheating, that's just not cool. You can't bring your 12-year-old in and say that he's only 9. Don't bring your drink mug from 1984, like you're saying.
Then they'll go to a different system where they don't make them, you know, where it's like a dollar every time you want to refill or something, if it gets abused.
Yeah, I think that's probably the next step. Either that or they're going to have, like, eye scans or something. You know?
They've got the barcode cups at the water parks, right?
Oh, I haven't heard of those. What do they do with the barcode cups?
I saw those when I was when you bought the mug for Typhoon Lagoon for the day. They had this barcode sticker on your mug, and you'd wave it in front of the soda machine, and then it would work for, like, a couple seconds to, like, you'd press the soda you want, and then as soon as you released, someone else would have to scan their mug to activate the soda machine. And that was a barcode sticker that was, like, it said Monday on it, and it was just stuck on front.
Yeah, so they must have a huge problem with people just going up and bringing their own cups.
Somebody actually recently said something to me, and I know this isn't related to the cups, but it's related to the whole cheating the system thing. Somebody actually had said to me that they could get their 8-year-old in for free as a 3-year-old.
Oh, no, they did not.
I swear to God.
How? They must be very small.
I was like, they're like, oh, we put them in a stroller.
We cover them up with blankets.
That's insane.
And I'm like,
we tell them to suck their
thumb.
And
they were like, aren't you impressed? And I'm like, no.
I'm actually impressed that they're so cheap.
I'm like, really?
All right, Chris, you're up. What do you have?
Okay. Mine is about the monorail and how it won't be running anymore during extra magic hours at night. So here's the official announcement from Disney. Beginning on July 11, 2011, the Epcot monorail service will stop operation 1 hour after regular park closing. And from August 1st, 2011, the Magic Kingdom monorail will stop operation 1 hour after regular park closing. So this means that it won't run anymore during extra magic hours. I'm not sure if that means it won't run during any of the parties. That would kind of be bad. So if you're at a monorail resort, you're going to have to take a boat or a bus back to your room.
Or walk if you're at the Contemporary.
Or swim.
Can I tell you why that's happening? Because I'm staying on the monorail this year.
And you have bad luck?
Yep.
You know what? I mean, I can kind of see the reasoning behind this, because the monorails, I think the current version, the what are they, the Mark 6, I think, and they came out in 1988, 89, I think. So they're kind of
Over 20 years old, yeah.
And it takes 90 minutes to cycle these machines down at the end of the night and 90 minutes to cycle them back up in the morning. So if you have days where on extra magic hours the park is open till, you know, 2, 3 a.m. or, you know, 2 a.m. and then the monorail's running till 3, 3:30, and then, you know, it has to start running again at 7 o'clock in the morning, 7:30 to get guests to the park, you know, early in the morning, well, you know, you might only have, you know, a very limited amount of time to, you know, to service these, you know, these monorails. And so there have been more breakdowns this year
there have
and
been.
Last year.
I mean, every time I go, there's something ridiculous happens at the monorail. Well, not ridiculous, but I mean, you know, we've had to get off them. We've had to wait. I mean, it is kind of a pain. But, you know, maybe it's time to replace those monorails and not – or the trains themselves and not limit people's benefits.
And I totally agree with that. And I someone made a statement online that, you know, it's become very obvious that during the recession – Disney has pulled money from areas like maintenance, you know, and it shows, you know, it shows with these breakdowns.
So how do you justify this with someone who's staying at a monorail resort?
I think it's hard to justify it with somebody who's staying at a monorail resort. And even running an hour after the park closes, even on a normal night, if you've got 70,000 people in the Magic Kingdom, you know, and a lot of them are going to the TTC, you know, to, you know, get back to their cars. That's not a lot of time to, you know, get everybody out and onto those monorails and
Now, see, they used to run when I was there. They would stop the monorail an hour after the park closed. But I don't remember extra magic hours, or at least I don't remember evening hours. So maybe they probably didn't have those. But it was always 1 hour after the park closed is when the monorail would stop. So they must have extended that.
I think that's realistic, though.
1 hour after the park closes? Well, if it's closing for extra magic hours, that's totally realistic. But if you're talking about closing it before then, that's ridiculous. And the parties are going to be a mess.
Well, you know, I don't think Disney has officially said what they're going to do with the parties.
No, they haven't.
They've made a decision.
I think it's a bad call.
It is.
I think it's a terrible call. And you know, I mean...
I think you're going to annoy a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think it's the cast members at those monorail resorts who are going to face the brunt of angry guests.
Or the poor people who are having to block the monorail.
They're going to get a...
That's going to get ugly.
You know,
yeah, it'll be interesting... It'll be interesting to see what happens.
But I think the only people who are going to know are the people that have stayed before. Like your regular guests and like, oh, okay, it's closed.
Yeah,
we got to take the boat.
Steve, that's the excuse Disney uses with everything. You know, like, oh, you know, we'll change, you know, from the small changes. Well, you know, we'll change the all beef hot dog at Casey's to, you know, a beef, you know, chicken combo. And
you're still upset about that hot dog.
Still on that hot dog.
Yes. If you've never gone, it's good to you.
That's
right. Just so you know, Bob, they're going back. They're changing the buns. They're not going to go back to the old ones, but they're trying some new ones out. Yeah.
Oh, something that doesn't taste gross? That would be good.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Steve, you made a point a couple of weeks ago on a podcast about Disneyland Paris not putting money into maintenance
and
waiting till things got to the point where they had no choice but to fix it. You know, well, and I'm kind of starting to see that a little bit, and I don't like it. I mean, these tarps on Main Street, you know, these facades that they had to put up to, you know, yep. work, they were up for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 months.
Wow.
I mean, in some places. Now, they look great. I mean, the buildings look fantastic, having seen them over the 4th of July. But there's no reason for regular routine maintenance to have taken that long. You know, and the point is, clearly they are not putting money into things like regular maintenance. And how smart is it to not spend money on routine maintenance and then...
Yeah, then you have to, like, completely rip down the wood and replace things that have rotted.
It takes money to make money. I mean, how many things are constantly, you know, broken? But, you know, the excuse being, well, you know, we still have a lot of people who are first-time visitors, and if they've never seen it, you know... This is normal to them. So, you know, so what if things on Space Mountain, you know, break down? So what if things are always broken on Splash? So what if the Yeti is stuck in the 1970s disco pose? And so what if we take away the monorail for a guest paying $500 a night to stay there? You know, I mean,
right.
you cannot both, you know, I mean, if you want to save money in a recession, I understand that Disney is a business, but you know, you can either cut your expenses or, you know, raise prices. You cannot do both and not change, you know, and keep making cutbacks.
I was just wondering if, you know, I know it's a couple years in the past now, but if this is still like procedural changes, they don't want to be running so late after the safety issues from the accident a few years ago. And this is still stuff coming down from that.
But that wasn't a technical error. That was human error.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't want cast members being tired running.
Well, then they just need to switch the shifts.
Being off property, like, you know, at a Denny's, you know, when somebody's life is, you know, on the line.
Yeah, but they can just, I mean, not for nothing, but Disney has people working around the clock on most days for things. They just need to shift it.
Yeah, they have a night crew that comes out.
They just need to put a shift that's not sleeping.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it just doesn't make sense.
They're either cutting cost.
Yeah.
Or they're either cutting cost or it's maintenance. And if it's maintenance, they should have a budget that says, okay, after so many years, we need to budget for new monorails.
The problem is exactly. And I mean, 20 something years old, it's probably time for some new monorails.
Yeah.
And they're also running, because of that accident, they're also running one monorail short. You know, they were able to save one car from each of those two monorails and you know, able to create, you know, another one. But I think instead of 12, they have 11 now running.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're already short, so there's already, you know, more, you know, work going, you know, being put on those older machines. And I get all that. But, you know, geez, Disney, stop being cheap. You know, I mean, really. You know, because the problem here is, you know, they make cuts, you know, because they say, well, it's a tight economy. Everybody has to, you know, tighten their belts. Fine. But when the economy improves, the stuff never comes back.
Yeah. And by the time you put it in an order for 12 monorails, it probably takes a while to put that together.
I'm sure it would take years. Here's something interesting I heard. And this is just being tossed around, but people are just trying to say, you know, well, if it's not for maintenance reasons or budget reasons, maybe it's because they're going to be building that DVC at the Grand Floridian. And also, there's a huge rumor about more work going on at the Polynesian and one of those buildings being, you know, shut down altogether. So I wonder if, you know, if that could be part of the reason, too.
Yeah, but I don't know what the monorail would have to do with that. I mean, to me, all it's going to do is clutter up the busing and make the busing a whole nother issue. And I mean, I just think it's going to make everything a little bit more harder to get around.
I have to say, I know that it's very inconvenient and people pay a lot of money for these monorail resorts. But as far as inconveniencing guests and not being able to accommodate them, I don't think that's going to be the case. I think Steve mentioned this on another podcast that Disney researches every single move that they make before, especially a move like this. They're going to have the research in there, and they're going to know what they're talking about.
I'm sure they have absolutely every plan you can imagine in mind. But the fact is, if you've sold me something and told me that at the end of the night I can get on a monorail and go three stops and hit the Polynesian, that's how I want to get back to my room.
And it's a selling.
I take a boat and I don't want to take a bus.
Yeah, it is a selling point.
You know, and I don't buy that they research everything or
oh, I think
if,
they
if,
do.
Well, okay, if they do, then they're not listening to their guest concerns. Because there's
they listen, but they still have the mighty dollar in the back of their heads or the front.
I'm not even saying that I think they research everything from the standpoint of guest satisfaction. I think they research everything from the standpoint of how many buses are we going to need, how many boats are we going to need.
Okay, that
they know how many numbers. They know how many people are leaving the turnstiles between those hours, and they know how many people are at the resorts.
And here's the other kicker: if they go ahead and don't. And they've taken this away, they've raised ticket prices, and now there are very strong rumors that they're not going to offer free dining in the fall. If all of that happens, you know, come on, they're taking everything away.
Well, and that was my point. I mean, you could either cut expenses or raise prices, you know, and claim, well, we're doing it for the almighty dollar and because we have rising costs. I mean, they're a business, and yeah, every business has rising costs. You cannot do both.
Right.
And, you know,
it's bad business.
And it's the almighty dollar, but it's your guests who bring you that almighty dollar.
And your guests are paying. It's not like you're paying, you know, $50 a night to go there, you know, with your ticket pricing, your food. And most people are paying for that, all of it within the park. Most people are eating in the park, staying in the park, giving them all their money. They really should get the service.
Look at all the things that have been slowly taken away for the excuse of the almighty dollar.
Well, and it's not almighty dollar. I mean, a lot of times what they say is we're not doing this because we've talked to guests and it's not meeting guests' needs. And in fact, that's what the cast member told me when I talked to I called for something else and I asked about this. And she said, oh, yeah, we got a memo about this. And she read the memo to me and it said, you know, based on guests' needs. I'm like,
that's
really?
That's BS. Yeah, because you know, that's what they said about Pleasure Island. Based on guest responses, our guests want more shopping and dining. They don't want the Adventurers Club.
No, because well, Disney now will make more money.
I have to tell you that I don't think most people knew the Adventurers Club was there. Yes, it's true.
Well, I'm just using that. Okay, I mean, okay, as a local that goes to the Magic Kingdom, would I rather at the end of the night take a monorail back to the TTC, which can fit, you know, hundreds of people at one time? Or do I want to wait for multiple buses and while people on, you know, wheelchairs and ECVs have to be loaded on and you know, that's not their fault.
Well, and
that takes a long time.
And the strollers are an issue too. If you're a mom and a stroller, you know, it's so much easier. I would gladly take a monorail as opposed to a bus with a stroller.
Are they not
seeing the lines at the end of the night to get onto the monorail? I mean, the lines are long enough that you can look at that and go, okay, this is necessary.
Well, and I have to tell you that the other day I was actually I emailed someone about something they asked about the most convenient resort, and I kind of hesitated. You know, I usually default to if you have small children, the monorails are the most convenient resort. But I thought, well, maybe I can't say that now.
Right.
You know what? This is going to make the Epcot resorts look very appealing.
Yeah.
I think. You know, because you can walk right into Epcot. You've got the boardwalk right there. Take a boat to Hollywood Studios. You know,
I mean,
if you really want to hoof it, you can walk.
You can still walk to the Contemporary, but the other two you can't.
Right.
Well, here's another question, and Steve put this out in an email. We all got it. But what about the idea that not enough people actually go to Extra Magic Hours to make it worth it, at least from the monorail resorts?
I think they would cut back on the magic hours.
Right. That would be the solution there.
So do you think that's next? Do you think they're eventually going to go, enough people don't go. Let's,
well, they've already done that with Animal Kingdom.
No, because they can't do that because that's what sells people on wanting to stay inside
but they
the
haven't,
park.
But they haven't had extra magic hours in the form that they've been in since, 2002? They've only had it. So if, you know, this has only been a perk for less than a decade, as far as I understand it. It used to be you could just get in early in the morning, right?
Yeah, when I was there, it was a.m.
E-ride nights. Remember
the E-ride nights were $10.
For $10, $15, and they would limit it to like 5,000 tickets, you know, and it was only on select nights, maybe once during a week that you would stay. There would be an E-ride, you know, night at the Magic Kingdom.
Hmm.
You know,
and they are cutting back on stuff at Extra Magic Hours. No more characters either.
Yeah,
that's true. You make a good point.
Yeah.
So I mean, come on, taking.
Well, they're taking and they're charging more and they're taking more away.
And that is my point.
And yeah. Is a lot of this to fund the Fantasyland expansion? You know, to continue funding that.
Well, see, all that's supposed to be budgeted. For you know, we get much budgeted.
Not only that, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't have a look at the books. You know, I don't have access to Disney's books, but
yeah.
I've got to believe that their theme parks as a whole are making money hand over fist.
Oh well, you know, whenever you see, you know, whenever the Orlando Sentinel comes out with a, you know, report, they're always making money. Yeah. You know, they're not losing money.
I blame Mars Needs Moms.
Yeah, that's a Bob. Yeah. Bob hates that one.
I saw that at sea. That was a premiere at sea.
That was yours?
Yes.
Well, mine was the premiere at sea was Romeo and Juliet, which wasn't much better.
I like that one.
At midnight at 12:01.
Yeah. Try watching Mars Needs Mom at like
12:01.
You know, till like 1:30, and the movie's just going and going. Like, okay, I get it. It's like a bad Home Alone 3 in space. Like, I get it. You know,
that sounds really good, Bob.
You know, but and that's my thoughts on Mars Needs Mom. I totally agree with that. But yeah, I mean, you know, and I've heard things from cast members. Like, you know, I had a cast member at Art of Disney once tell me she saw the manifest sheet, which I don't think she was supposed to, with the cost of, you know, some of the artwork and stuff that came into the store, like what Disney paid versus like what they were selling it for. And she said, you would be amazed because some of this stuff is like, you know, the profit is in the hundreds of percent.
But that's any shop, you know.
Yeah,
and
but
if you're,
I mean,
if
you're
goofy enough to pay for that, have at it.
But at the same time, you know, again, cost cutting, you know, you used to be able to get a lot of themed individual park merchandise or individual resort merchandise, stuff that would just say, you know, Polynesian Resort or, you know, Beach Club or, you know, just Magic Kingdom or specific to an attraction. And now it's just all Disney World.
Yeah. Or Disney Parks. It's even the same at Disneyland Paris for some of the stuff.
And
it's just
the
same deal.
The quality has gone down quite a bit on stuff. So I don't know. I just see this comes across as just another cost-cutting measure. And I think it's a slap in the face to people, you know, staying on a monorail. You know,
I agree.
Well, not only that, but how much money are you paying for the monorail?
Right. Especially if there aren't any discounts, then you're paying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I still have faith in Disney as a company. I think as a huge company, I think it's, you know, pretty decent. But I am a little upset over this. And like I said, I think the hardest thing, you know, is how do you sell the monorail resort if, you know, they don't have that option during certain times?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
And really, the boats are just, they're going to have to do something. I mean, those boats hold like, what, 37 people? Those resort shuttles?
Yeah, they're going to have to put some more out.
I am totally not looking forward to taking a bus back to, you know, the TTC at the end of the night. I mean, that mm-hmm. kind of makes
no.
me want to, you know, hightail it out of the park and make sure I get on a monorail.
Yeah.
And skip the shopping.
Yes.
Oh, good point.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Skip the shopping.
Because nice to have that end of the night shopping, you know.
Yep. That's what I usually do just to kill time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I do that to let the crowds clear. Yeah.
But I might have to make a break for it for the monorail now.
So, yeah. I mean, so I don't know. I think we're starting to get to the point where it's getting a little bit ridiculous, you know.
I'm sorry. Bob, you just sounded... No, it's just the way Bob said that. A little bit ridiculous.
Yes.
I could just see you yelling at like a couple kids that way.
So, you see, you got me all riled up now. My blood
Gee, pressure. That didn't take much, Bob.
No, I, you know. So.
I agree. I could have done a whole other hour of just talking about how... Like the maintenance was dropping after, you know, in 2002, that they were just ignoring how much stuff in the mansion was broken that they finally took, what, another 5 years to fix after that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and from the little things like, you know, the hot dogs or, you know, to restrooms, okay, let's not clean them every hour. Let's, let's clean them every 2 hours.
The cleaning issue goes in cycles for me, too, because in December, I felt that a lot of the quick service places had stuff piled up. But in May, I thought everything was really clean. You know, I don't know why it just seems to not be very consistent. I will say, though, when I went to Universal, definitely made me appreciate the Disney quick service locations. You had a cluster of employees just standing around talking while tables that they were supposed to be bussing just sort of filled up. So, I mean, you never see that at Disney.
Well, yeah, I guess. Or most of the time, I don't think you'd yeah. see that. But yeah, I mean, you know, I just... You know, raise prices or cut. Don't do both.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're going to sell a monorail resort, then have the monorail running. You know, well, and if your monorail is getting old, buy some new ones.
Kind didn't of related. Just, oh, go ahead, Ron.
Didn't
sorry.
They just replace the Disneyland ones a few years ago?
They did. I mean, that's what,
yeah, or even earlier than that. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and haven't they had
sleek.
Issues? They've had issues because only one actual train is running right now. That's what I heard.
Oh.
They've had some maintenance problems on those. I could be wrong. I just sort of read it. I skimmed it. So.
And they probably are very complex machines. You know, I would imagine, you know.
Yeah. So here's another question, and it's kind of related, and it's not. But so... Because, you know, I'm obsessed with free dining. Do you think that it's coming? Do you think it's not coming?
We talked about this last week.
We talk about
voted,
this every
I
week.
I voted no.
Yeah.
We voted. I still vote no.
Do you know what, though, Steve? I might be leaning towards your side.
I may be flipping, too, at this point. I'm getting a little nervous.
I'm getting nervous.
I think if it comes out, it's going to be a, you know, craptastic deal. you know that.
Wow, we've
you know,
got a good night with Bob.
Bob is like Mr. Grumpy Pants.
No, I'm not grump. I'm passionate,
grumpy
about this company, and it is a shame to see what's, you know, who. Where is the leadership in this company? I mean, who is making these decisions? Who?
I think Bob should start making the decisions.
I think Bob needs to get a PR position.
You don't want Bob to do that because Bob will not give anyone free dining. He hates free dining. So.
I absolutely hate free dining.
All right.
Don't
well,
get him started.
That's
but,
not
but
nice.
No, I do think it will be a terrible deal if it comes out because look at the one that came out.
Well, that wasn't a terrible deal. I mean, it was still free dining. You just had to buy the $90 photo book, which is for a lot of people, they were going to do it anyway. I don't think that was a bad deal at all.
I don't think it's a bad deal. I think it was clever on Disney's part, but I don't think that a lot of people would have bought that photo book had they not been forced to.
Well, right. And the interesting thing was is you could have gotten the exact same deal if you had booked by December 20th, 2010.
Right.
You could have gotten free
without
dining
the book.
Without the book, yeah. So, I mean, but the thing is there's been nothing for October, November, or December. Mm. There's so much talk about this. People are really concerned.
Well, it depends on availability. November. If they have empty rooms, they're going to come up with something to fill them. And if they don't have empty rooms, then they're, you know, or if they only have a few, then they're going to come out with a deal that's not as good.
Yeah, I told you I was passionate about that one. I was going off. I was waiting on that one. So.
I'm
going
to give you a noogie next time I see you. Well, I have to stand on a chair. I'm going to have to get on a step ladder.
All right. Next, we're going to have Bob. Bob, you're next.
Oh, Lord.
No, mine is.
Bob is allowed to speak, too. It's just news.
About puppy dogs and kittens.
Oh, yes. No, I'm going to talk about hot dogs more. No,
God.
No, and turkey legs. And emu.
And Brazilians.
And Brazilians, yeah, all at once.
And women.
Brazilians eating turkey legs. My story is short and sweet. The GECO, the cooking place at Disney's Animal Kingdom Lodge, has just been awarded or named to Wine Enthusiast Magazine's top 100 best in wine and fine dining in the country list. Jiko fuses the bold flavors of traditional African, Indian, Mediterranean cuisine into their menu, and their wine list features one of the largest selections of South African vintages in North America. This is not the first award for Jiko as far as their wines go. It's won multiple awards, including the Orlando Sentinel's Foodie Best Wine List Award, big whoop. The Orlando Sentinel! And the Wine Spectator Excellence Award for Most Outstanding Wine List. So yeah, if you're a wine drinker, Jiko is the place you want to go.
Okay. All right.
We're not passionate about wine.
Yeah, I think we're moving on. That was very interesting, Bob.
Well, I know. It's kind of a letdown after you got me riled up, but yeah.
That was good. It's quite an honor, actually. It really is.
It really is. I mean,
considering that there are a lot of restaurants that it's competing with.
And if you've ever walked into Jiko or had dinner at Jiko, I mean, they make a point of showing you the wine room. And it is, I mean, it's massive. And there's, I think they told me when Donna and I ate there that there were something like 10,000 bottles, in stock types of wines. So.
Let's hope there's no earthquake.
Don't tell Lauren that.
What?
There's a lot of wine in one place, Lauren.
You can get a room there.
If there's cupcakes, I'm in.
You know what? They need to put a suite in that wine room.
There you go. Just put a rolled-away bed. Put a cot in there.
So we do have a couple of listener questions today, and our first one comes from Terry from Kansas. And Terry says, what are your opinions of the Disney pin auctions on eBay? I'm looking to get a supply of pins, about 25 or so, for our kids to trade with cast members during our Walt Disney World trip in September. A quick eBay search shows tons of auctions for pins as cheap as $25 for $20, but I'm concerned that we might just end up with a bunch of counterfeit pins. How widespread of a problem do you think counterfeit pins are? Other than hunting down a reputable eBay seller, is there a better way to go about getting a good deal on authentic trader pins? Thanks for the podcast. It's nice to get firsthand information as a supplement to the many available WDW travel books. I have a pad full of notes based on your suggestions. Great show. Well, thank you. We appreciate that.
She's got a whole notebook full of Bob's. All of Bob's comments.
Bob-isms.
Things that makes
all Bob-isms.
I have right of first refusal on any publication.
She's probably got subsections, things that make Bob angry, things that make Bob sad,
i.e. free dining.
Yeah.
That can fall into both.
Yeah.
That makes me both angry and sad. So, okay, I can actually take this one because I was a big eBay guy and a big seller of Disney product on eBay. Honestly, for a bunch of pins like that, whether it's 25, 50, 100, whatever you're going to get, eBay is the cheapest route because you can buy them for $1 a piece, just about. Versus at the park, $6.95, $8.95, $11.95 per pin. That can get awfully expensive if you want to do pin trading. Counterfeits are somewhat of a problem on eBay, but you can avoid that just by looking for a reputable seller. Look for somebody with a lot of feedback, a high feedback number, 99, 100%, a large number of customers, and read the feedback. A lot of them do also say in their auctions there are no counterfeits, Sedesma, I think they're called, or something like that. There's cheaper pins, not official pins that people sometimes try to include. But I actually have bought pins like that off eBay, like $25 for $20, and no problems. I mean, the one downside is you don't know what you're going to get, so they may be pins that you don't want at all, but if you're just going to be trading them away anyway, it's not such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And Lisa, you suddenly sound very, very loud. I don't know why. That is the easiest and best way to go about doing it. Just look for a reputable eBay seller and trade away,
Yeah, Steve's done his share of purchases on eBay for pins. And exactly what you said, if your main purpose or your only purpose is to trade them, it doesn't matter what pins you get because you're going to be trading them to get what you do want.
So we got a lanyard for Amber when she was little, and then we'd give her 10 or 15 pins that we would get off of eBay, and it doesn't matter what they are. And then she would trade them for ones that she likes with other cast members.
And she's got a pretty good collection now. And there are some pins in what you get from eBay that are pretty good, and she's kept some of those as well. So they're not all just, you know, junk.
No, they're not all junk. Actually, I got some that were very, very nice off of eBay. So they're, you know, and the way these people get these pins and why they can sell them so cheap is because they are serious pin traders, you know, and they just buy duplicates and things and they're trading and you know, they build up collections. These people have, you know, been doing it for years.
Well, I've also heard that Disney will put some of the not so successful pins into eBay, Disney itself.
Oh, huh. I hadn't heard that.
I know they used to have like a Disney Auctions name on eBay, but I hadn't seen that recently. But, you know, and then, of course, at the Disney outlet, you can get, you know, pins somewhat cheaper, you know, the less popular ones. But still nothing like a deal you're going to get on, you know, eBay. You're not going to find groups of pins like 25 for 20 bucks anywhere else.
Right. Yeah, you can definitely get some good deals. And you don't feel so bad about losing them. You know, right. There's a lot of advantages to doing that.
And the other thing with dealing with PayPal is, you know, if you're doing a transaction through PayPal on eBay, it is, you know, you have buyer protection. So if the items do happen to just be false, you know, fake, you can file a PayPal claim and, you know, you'll get your money back because PayPal always sides with the buyer, not the seller.
Okay.
And I mean, I had to wear a lanyard once or twice, like when I worked parades. And what we were told is, you know, as long as it looks like an authentic Disney pin, a cast member has to trade from their lanyard. They can't refuse. They can't go, oh, that doesn't look real, as long as it looks somewhat real.
As long as it's not Bugs Bunny.
Right. And so, I mean, if they're just looking to trade to the, you know, cast members, I don't think that they're, you know, they're never going to get refused unless they're really horrible, like knockoffs.
I was also told that a cast member cannot refuse any child who wants to trade, but they can refuse an adult.
I don't remember. I mean, attractions cast members weren't normally wearing the lanyards. But if we worked a parade shift or something like that, doing just crowd control, where we're just walking around talking to guests, we could pick up a lanyard if we wanted to from with the pins to trade. And I think I did it once or twice. But that was what I was told, was just as long as if a guest came up to you and this was once again, like 10 years ago, like when the pin trading first came out, if a guest came up to you, it was a Disney pin, you had to trade because they're not your pins. So yep. Why do you care?
Yeah. Do they give you like a lanyard at wardrobe or something, and then you with 10 or 15 pins on it, and then you just turn it back in at the end of the night?
For us, it was like our area office, like the guest service managers would like hand them out to people who wanted them for those shifts.
Okay.
Because I'm assuming it might be different for like the merchandise people who all, I think, have to wear them.
All right, so I have one more question, and this one comes from Angela, and it's real short. It says, I'm a big Oswald fan, and I would like to know if Disney will do anything big with him in the States besides Epic Mickey or the poster on Main Street. Anyone know anything about Oswald?
I do.
Uh-oh, here we go.
I think Bob's the only one who knows about Oswald.
Okay, and probably most guests don't know about this, or a lot of guests don't know about this, because when you bring them up, they kind of give you a curious look. Oswald the Lucky Rabbit, or Oswald Rabbit, was the first animated cartoon character created by UB Iwerks and Walt Disney for film distribution by Universal Pictures in the 1920s and 1930s. The first big cartoon was 1927. There was a breakout hit called Poor Papa featuring Oswald Rabbit. In the spring of 1928, Oswald was very, very popular. Walt Disney goes to Charles Mintz, who was over at Universal Studios, and asked for an increased budget. And instead, Mintz demanded that Walt Disney take a 20% budget cut, and as leverage said, by the way, you know, we own the rights to Oswald Rabbit, and I've hired away most of your staff. So Walt Disney actually ended up leaving you know, separating from Universal, and Universal got the rights to Oswald the Rabbit, and continued to produce the movies, you know, cartoons with Oswald Rabbit for years. The result of that was actually pretty positive because, you know, having lost his character, they needed to come up with something else. And the result was that Ub Iwerks and Walt Disney created, you know, Mickey Mouse. And it was actually Ub Iwerks who drew Mickey Mouse, the character, as he's known today. So there's actually, as a side note, a very interesting documentary called The Ub Iwerks Story, produced by his granddaughter, all about, you know, his role in all of that. Oswald Rabbit actually came back to the Walt Disney Company. Walt Disney Company got the rights back in 2006 in a very strange trade. they traded Al Michaels from Disney ABC, ESPN, over to NBC Sports. Al Michaels wanted to be reunited with John Madden and doing football, and ABC had recently lost the rights to ABC football. And so they traded with NBC Universal Al Michaels for the rights to Oswald the Rabbit. So Disney actually does own the rights to Oswald the Rabbit, with the exception of a bunch of cartoons produced by Walter Lantz. So you'll actually see cartoons released by Disney with Oswald Rabbit, and cartoons with Woody Woodpecker cartoons released by Universal featuring Oswald Rabbit. So it's kind of weird there. But he hasn't really had much exposure aside from like Epic Mickey. They did release, I believe, an Oswald Rabbit plush toy in 2010 at Disney World and Disneyland. He's been on a poster in Tokyo Disneyland. And in 2011, he was also on a poster at the Magic Kingdom Park and on the construction walls at Disney's California Adventure. As far as using him more in the park, Disney has said that they do intend at some point to reintroduce Oswald and have him play a bigger role, but they've never stated a time frame for this and when that might actually happen. But they said when it does happen, they will introduce him with much fanfare, which they probably have to do because nobody knows who he is. So, but that is who Oswald the Rabbit is. So yeah, if you play Epic Mickey and you're wondering who the black and white little rabbit is, that's Oswald. So, and there you go.
Yeah. That was good for you, Bob.
Yeah.
Wow, that sounded very prepared. Did you prepare this?
I researched it a little bit.
You're good. Wow, that sounded very good. Okay, so I think that's going to wrap it up for another week here at Mouse Chat. I would like to thank Pixie Vacations for sponsoring the podcast, and you can feel free to download our shows at iTunes and also mousechat.net, and please send us some more of your comments and questions. Send those to comments@mousechat.net, and we'll be here again next week. Join us on Mouse Chat.